I'm Annie.
And I'm Parker.
And you're listening to
WGXC Acre
Hudson
Catskill 90.7 FM.
Tickets are now available at wavefarm.org/drive-in for an unforgettable drive-in event with Negative Land and Sue C., Matt Mose, and Rodney Allen Greenblatt opening. Turn out for Negative Land's legendary sound collage and real-time cinema with Sue C., along with Matt Mose's renowned electronic music and sampling culture. This and so much more at the Greenville Drive-In, Friday, May 31st. All to support Wave Farm and WGXE. Tickets are going fast. Get yours now. Drive-In is all one word at wavefarm.org/drive-in. WGXE underwriting support is provided in part by the Country Shepherd, a construction consultation and client representation service for custom residential projects and maintenance. The Country Shepherd advises clients on every element of their renovation, ground up build or remodel, from hiring the right craftsmen to managing timelines to locating the exact materials that their clients require. Founder Jeff Wilcox has been building custom residences since 1990 in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, California, and Italy. For more information, visit thecountryshepherd.com.
Wave Farm's WGXE is made possible in part by the generous support of Daniel Steffi in Brooklyn, New York. WGXE monthly supporters care deeply about Creative Community Radio. Their generosity and investment keep this unique station viable. You too can become a monthly supporter by going to wgxe.org/donate and establishing a donation at the amount of your choosing. We hope you will do so. Thank you so much for your support.
The Public News Service DOA Newscast, May the 22nd, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. A new move from the federal government takes a step toward modernizing the process of building energy transmission lines while also protecting wildlife. Our Eric Tegenhoff explains.
The Federal Energy Regulatory Commission has approved the Transmission Planning and Cost Allocation Rule, which will help the country meet its growing need for clean energy. Head of Idaho Wildlife Federation Brian Brooks says the rule also takes into account wildlife by focusing on existing infrastructure, which will make Idaho a hub for clean energy and transmission lines.
This rule will absolutely have an impact on Idaho transmission and minimize the impact that that infrastructure will have on our fish and game species here in the Gem State.
A study from the U.S. Energy Department found the country needs to double its regional transmission capacity to meet its 2035 clean energy goals. The rule requires planning at least 20 years into the future.
And former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani entered a not guilty plea Tuesday to 9 felony charges stemming from his role in an effort to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss in Arizona to Joe Biden. That from the Associated Press. The AP reports 10 others, including former Arizona Republican Party Chair Kelly Ward, also pleaded not guilty to conspiracy, forgery, and fraud charges related to the case. The indictment alleges Giuliani spread false claims of election fraud in Arizona after the 2020 election and presided over a downtown Phoenix gathering, where he claimed officials made no effort to determine the accuracy of presidential election results. And the impact of that technical glitch overhauling the student financial aid form is still being felt. A Minnesota nonprofit reminds college students tuition aid is still available and its new digital tool can help with the process.
Issues that stem from a redesign of the free application for federal student aid have left families scrambling to secure loans, grants, and scholarships before sending their kids off to college in the fall. North Star Prosperity Executive Director Mike Dean says even as the kinks are sorted out, FAFSA completion in Minnesota is down 16%. His group partnered with a national organization to develop an online tool to serve as a go-between.
It essentially is an AI-powered FAFSA advisor that can be available 24/7.
He encourages graduating high school students and their families still figuring out college plans to give the platform named Wyatt a try. A lot of these decisions are often made by early May, but Minnesota's deadline for accessing aid this coming school year is June 30th of 2025. I'm Mike Moen.
The Minnesota Office of Higher Education says applying now to figure out which types of aid you qualify for can help you make a more informed decision about enrollment. This is Public News Service. And Governor Mark Gordon will address folks in Wyoming this week to detail new avenues for property tax relief.
Following the pandemic, property values in Wyoming increased, and so did property taxes, which jumped nearly 50% between 2019 and 2023, according to the Wyoming Department of Revenue. Lawmakers passed several bills during the recent session to act as pressure relief valves for property owners, offering a variety of tax breaks over the next few years. The mix of beneficiaries, application requirements, and timelines is complex. So Gordon and Department of Revenue Director Brenda Henson will speak directly to taxpayers via a teletown hall on Friday. Tom Laycock with AARP Wyoming, which is hosting the event, says the changes have been years in the making.
The property tax conversation has been going for the last 3 years. We've seen a number of bills, last year double-digit bills, to try to provide that property tax relief.
The state has been hogtied by a 1988 rule in the Wyoming Constitution that says all forms of property must be taxed, including commercial, industrial, and residential. I'm Kathleen Shannon.
Nearly $33 million from President Biden's bipartisan infrastructure law is headed to Colorado to help locate and remove hazardous lead pipes from the state's 900 community drinking water systems.
Lead water pipes were once commonly used because they were cheap and flexible, but were banned in 1986 over health concerns. Ron Falco with the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment says young children are most at risk for lead exposure because their bodies are still developing.
And over time, that lead can build up, and even at low levels in the water, cause health effects. Those health effects can include learning difficulties, loss of appetite, hearing loss, or harm to brain development.
I'm Eric Galatis.
The effort is part of Biden's agenda to generate economic opportunities by investing at least half of the money in historically underserved neighborhoods, including communities of color. Finally, from Shantia Hudson, North Carolina's maternal death rate is higher than the national average.
One North Carolina woman is determined to shed light on the signs and symptoms through her own experience. Tasheen Mamak is a healthcare patient advocate well aware of the increased risk of heart disease during pregnancy, but she was taken by surprise when it affected her. Mack says she was about 21 weeks pregnant when she began experiencing concerning symptoms.
I noticed I was gaining weight, significant amount of weight, and having a hard time breathing. I could walk 3 steps and just have a hard time breathing. So, you know, I was going to my doctor's appointment, asking my doctor originally, like, what's going on?
The American Heart Association recommends expectant mothers discuss the signs and risks of heart disease with their doctor. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform, and find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, May 22nd. Local early morning temperatures range from 53 degrees in Medusa to 64 in Copaig. Regional average soil temperature is 61 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be high. A cool morning will turn to a hot afternoon. A high of 90 degrees happens at 3 p.m. At around 8 p.m., chances for rain and thunder arrive and continue all night. We see a low of 65 degrees. It looks like it's going to be humid, so air conditioners will be buzzing. Tomorrow, more rain and stormy conditions. A high of 84 happens at 3 p.m. Sometime overnight, the rain will come to an end and we will see a low of 59 degrees. Friday is looking dry and sunny with a high of 83. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:47 a.m., low tide at 9:35 a.m., high tide again at 3:09 p.m., then low tide once again at 9:29 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 69 degrees. And the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 8:01 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:24 a.m. Looking way up, we see X-class flare chances are at 10%. Plasma winds will be slow at 359 kilometers per second, with a thin density of 3 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently okay below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair below 14 megahertz overnight. There are no chances for aurora this evening. The current sunspot number is 146. And this has been the Better Weather for Wednesday, May 22nd, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
You have the already global networks. So my argument is very simple. The present media is too large and wasteful. From now on, we should think about the more smaller media to diverse our culture and community. I have different idea on airwave. Airwave belong to the every people, everybody, not to the states or a government. Okay, I will make the transmitter now.
Please don't stop me. feel like somebody's after you? Or right behind you? Are you on your way home? In your car listening to WGXC Acra?
Beautiful day for the race. Stooge Hand is the favorite today. Assault is in there. Dog Biscuit is 3-1. Safety Pin has been scratched. And at 20-1, Beetle Bomb. Now the horses are approaching the starting gate, and there they go! And it's Stooge Hand going to the front. Cabbage is second on the rail. Beautiful Linda is third by a length. And Beetle Bomb. Around the first turn, Stooge Hand is still in front. Cabbage is second by a head.
Cabbage by a head!
Beautiful Linda is third. And Beetle Bomb. Into the back stretch. Dog Biscuit is now leading the pack. Lady Evelyn is second, very close. Banana is coming up through the bunch.
Banana coming up through the bunch!
And Beetle Bomb. At the half, Stooge Hand still out in front. Apartment House is second with plenty of room. Assault is passing Battery.
Assault Battery!
Notary Sojak is fourth. And in last place by 10 lengths, I believe it is. Yes, it is Beetle Bomb. Around a turn, heading for home. It's Stooge Hand and Dog Biscuit and Girdle in the stretch. Flying Sylvester is third. And Mother-in-Law nagging in the rear.
Oh, oh, oh.
And now they come down to the wire. And it's number one. And now number two. And it's very close. It'll either be a photo finish or an oil painting. And now Lewis leads with a left. And Lewis is in there slugging. And it's a battle. And now they're tearing hair. There's hair all over the ring. There's hair all over the place. I don't know whose hair it is. It's mine. And there goes the winner!
Thank you.
You have just suffered an industrial injury from Wasteland on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thursday, May 9th, parents at Montessori Magnet School in Albany received an email from the principal, John Powell. It read in part, "Dear families, I am writing to make you aware of a matter that occurred outside during one of our recess periods Thursday afternoon. As students were playing with chalk, some drew Free Palestine and images of the Palestinian flag on a sidewalk near the garden on the Austin Avenue side of our building. We are aware that this messaging may be hurtful to members of our community, especially in the tense environment in our world as the terrible conflict in Gaza continues. Our staff removed the images before the end of the school day, and I would like to emphasize that the Montessori Magnet School community, like our entire school district community, is a place of tolerance and inclusivity. Messaging that may frighten, intimidate, or offend any members of our community is never acceptable and cannot have a place in our school or on our campus." Many parents were frustrated with the email and with the implications toward the Palestinian students at the school and their families. At the Albany Board of Education meeting on May 16th, the Albany City Schools Superintendent Joseph Hochreiter addressed the letter, followed by a statement from the board read by President Vicki Smith.
"My staff did help Mr. Powell create the communication that went home to families on last Thursday afternoon. Our goal by taking that proactive step was first and foremost to assure the safety of everyone within the Montessori community. Before the images were removed from the sidewalk, they led to some uncomfortable interactions among Montessori students. Upon seeing the messages some classmates had drawn, others began drawing as well and began stepping on the images and crossing them out. Following these events, Montessori's social work team checked in with each of the classrooms in grades 3 and 5 who were out there during recess. It's important to reiterate that school staff determined there was no malicious intent involved in these drawings and no students were disciplined in any way. We'll also continue to teach our students how to think, not what to think, and encourage them to use their voice on topics that are critical to our community and our world. We'll also work diligently to communicate in a manner that's more sensitive to such matters. We understand last week's email did not meet this expectation for many. As superintendent, that lands on me, and you have my commitment that we will communicate differently.
We look to the superintendent and his team to ensure that in our schools, every child feels seen, heard, respected, safe, and supported. That students develop skills they need to successfully navigate the world around them. That we teach students to engage thoughtfully and critically with, in terms of complex issues. And that students learn to use their voice to make positive change with a deep respect for our shared, diverse community. Part of prioritizing equity is creating awareness around intent versus impact. The board knows that the district's response was intended to ensure that students felt safe and protected. However, the actions and subsequent letter had the opposite impact for some, and for that, we apologize. We invite ongoing dialogue with students, families, and community members to improve our communications and maintain a thriving, inclusive school environment rooted in a broad and empathetic understanding of the world. We will be working with the superintendent to provide additional opportunities for dialogue moving forward.
After the board's statement, the floor was opened for individual comments from members of the board.
Mr. Elmanyawi.
I first wanted to center this conversation essentially by having a moment of silence, 8 seconds for each month that there's been this conflict where Jews, Muslims, Christians have died. Let's start with that. Begin by saying that I've had many tears about this as a district parent, as an Egyptian American, as an artist, as a humanist who genuinely loves and sees the beauty in all people. I personally found the letter distributed to Montessori parents to be highly offensive and have confirmed that many of our families feel the same way. And it's not limited to Muslim families. It's not limited to any certain voice. It's many voices who did not appreciate and like it. We viewed it as prejudice against our Muslim, Arab, and Palestinian students and families. And as a father to two boys who are half Egyptian and Muslim and love their Jewish friends and understand what is happening in Palestine, I found it extremely disrespectful. This letter should not have been approved without board consultation. It is not a principal level letter and was written and distributed unilaterally without board approval.
Thank you. Dr. Shatour.
The beauty about our district is that we are diverse. And with diversity, it brings different challenges, which are diverse in themselves. And I look at our district as a family. And any family has disagreements. Mistakes happen. We have to own our mistake, learn from our mistake, and move on. And unfortunately, in this case, it was the adults' perception of what was going on, in my opinion, was the mistake. And that the tone of the letter was not appropriate, even though the intent wasn't there, or the intent of the letter was not what we perceive, the perception is what comes through. And that is where we made a mistake.
Next, the board invited members of the public to speak and read letters submitted on the topic.
The only thing I can understand about what happened at Montessori is that somebody believed that there was a particular group that has some sort of privilege that comes from I don't know where, and that there was concern that that group was offended or insulted or might be discomforted by a child writing Free Palestine. And that at its core is short-sighted, inaccurate, and does not reflect an understanding of the Jewish community in this country to think that the Jewish community needs to be privileged in a way that no Jewish child can risk being possibly made uncomfortable when there's a genocide going on. And it's also inaccurate because the Jewish community is far from monolithic.
Okay, the second letter is written by Mahak Jamil and signed by the Albany Muslim Advocacy Coalition, Al Arqam Center for Saratoga, Al Fatima Islamic Center, Al Hidayah Center, the Islamic Center of the Capital District, the ICCD, and Masjid As-Salam in Albany. The Montessori Magnet School administration's interrogation of these students, immediate erasure of the drawings, and strongly worded letter to parents is wholly tone deaf at best and willfully discriminatory at worst. The signatories of this letter are grassroots organizations and places of worship dedicated to empowering the voice of roughly 50,000 Muslims in and around the capital region, advocating for justice, equality, and understanding for all. Part of our collective mandate has been working against the censoring of speech or actions in support of human rights and speaking out against anti-Muslim rhetoric that has skyrocketed these past few months. Anti-Semitism, also on the rise and abominable, has been weaponized to silence criticism against the Israeli administration. Our community is buried under a tsunami of grief. We are bombarded with images of our relatives, friends, brothers, and sisters in faith being decimated each hour. Many in the Muslim community and others who support Palestinian human rights have been expelled from schools, fired from jobs, blacklisted from future jobs, evicted from housing, simply for daring to speak out against the brutality of the Israeli war in Gaza.
The following comment is from Jennifer Marlowe. Per district policy 5225, student personal expression, students do have the right to freedom of expression as long as there is no material disruption to the school's educational process. There is certainly no evidence that these images, which were created during recess and outside of the school in classroom, created any kind of disruption to the school environment. Two, it appears that the district would benefit from having professional development for staff and teachers on this fraught and sensitive issue. I agree that the individual's families need to be discussing this with their children, and the incident last week did open up a space for having these important conversations at home for all of us. But if the students are bringing it to school, then there is a need to some specific training for how to handle this in a more sensitive manner. Lastly, I'd like to request an apology be issued to the family or families whose students were involved. I'm concerned about the negative message that the immediate erasure of the chalk images sent to the children and their families in school who are Palestinian and have relatives in Gaza. We need to be creating safe spaces for multiple perspectives to be heard. The email sent around to families felt like it foregrounded the lives and feelings of Jewish students over those of Muslim and or Palestinian students.
Reporting for Hudson Mohawk Magazine, this is Moses Nagel.
We're joined with Carl Grossman, who's an investigative reporter down on Long Island. He's also written a number of books related to some of the cover-ups around nuclear power. And we asked Carl to come on to talk about some recent news stories that Governor Hochul seems to be perhaps reversing direction on the nuclear power. Obviously, under Governor Cuomo, we finally got the Indian Point nuclear power plant shut down, though Governor Cuomo did spend $7.6 billion to subsidize the opening of or maintaining three upstate nuclear power plants. So, Carl, is this a good idea that Governor Hochul is beginning to, you know, raise the issue? Well, maybe we should be using a little bit more nuclear power to help meet our climate goals.
It's a terrible idea. All that Governor Hochul has to really do is to read a book written by Dr. Mark Jacobson of Stanford University, an energy expert who actually worked closely a few years ago with the state in creating a green energy plan for New York State. The book is called No Miracles Needed. And what he says in the book is that existing technologies led by solar and wind, existing safe, green, renewable technologies can provide all the energy we need, and nuclear is not needed.
Now, there has been some pushback from some people, particularly down in, I think it's Orange County, who have argued, well, because we shut down the Indian Point nuclear power plant, you know, that's helped expand the use of natural gas, and certainly both Cuomo and Hochul have been supporters of natural gas, and they say good to stop nuclear power, but bad if it ends up promoting, you know, more natural gas as a solution.
Well, it's not a solution. It's considered a bridge fuel. But again, all one has to do is to go to the work, and some of it was tailored to New York State, the work Jacobson has done, which concludes, no, you don't even need natural gas. So-called natural gas is a bridge fuel, solar and wind. And then there's all kinds of other sources of energy, tidal and wave energy. And obviously hydropower been around for a long time, and energy efficiency. There's no need for the big old types of nuclear power plants, or what Hochul seems to be interested in, or what the nuclear industry is pushing, claiming these are new and improved nuclear plants, advanced nuclear power plants, particularly a plant which is has the name Small Modular Nuclear Reactor. It ain't small. It's 300 megawatts. It's not green. Same kind of problems that the bigger nuclear plants have, of producing waste and prone to nuclear accidents. In fact, Dr. Gordon Edwards, he's the president of the Canadian Coalition for Nuclear Responsibility. He says these kind of plants were around, these small nukes, 50 and 60 years ago, and didn't succeed then. What we need to do again is truly turn to green, safe energy, which, as Dr. Jacobson stresses, they're here now. No miracles are needed.
Well, I remember Dr. Jacobson, along with Professor Howarth, Antonia Graffia from Cornell, did the study maybe 2011, 2012, which, you know, was using the fight against the fracking that was going to take place in the Southern Tier, that we can meet all our energy needs with wind and solar and geothermal and conservation. you know, rather than fossil fuels and natural gas. And, you know, that did lead to the moratorium, actually eventually the halt to fracking. Now, unfortunately, I understand that this push to, you know, resurrect the nuclear industry, which has been pretty much dying for decades, is not just limited to New York, that other states like California have begun to reverse directions?
Well, Gavin Newsom, the California governor, has done a 180-degree flip. He organized the shutdown of the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plants. But now that they're not shutting down in California, all kind of money from people, tax money, is going towards the nuclear industry. What the nuclear industry is doing in this country, indeed in the world right now, is looking for the magic bullet, they feel, to deal with, this is their claim, the climate crisis is nuclear power, because this is the claim, but it's baloney, that nuclear power plants, nuclear technology, it doesn't emit greenhouse gases. In fact, the nuclear fuel cycle, mining, milling, enrichment, is enormously carbon intensive. And furthermore, nuclear power plants themselves emit carbon. Carbon-14, a radioactive form of carbon. So again, the baloney being promoted by the nuclear industry these days, that nuclear is going to be the technology that will deal with the climate crisis. It'll just contribute to the climate crisis. It's a big lie, which is not new for the nuclear industry.
And of course, one of the points that Professor Chagason makes is that if you will to build nuclear power plants, they take so long to actually construct these days that it's not going to be timely enough. Apparently, we no longer have any chance to keep them below 1.5 degrees Celsius, but even trying to keep between 2, you know, nuclear power does not fit into it. And of course, you have the issue is that much of the uranium in this country, you know, basically gets mined on indigenous lands, Native Americans, and that's been an environmental disaster, particularly out west. And the other thing I know, because you're down on Long Island, is that, you know, I remember the whole fight against the Sherman nuclear power plant, and you know, Cuomo eventually got Loco to go to a public power authority. And what's been going on with this whole effort to try to get finally this publicly owned utility to actually operate like a public power system on Long Island? Is that making any progress?
Well, it should. There was a legislative commission that was impaneled and came up with a report saying that LIPA, the Long Island Power Authority, should actually run the grid. What the deal has been ever since LIPA began wasn't supposed to be this way, was a third party has operated the electric grid for LIPA. The model for LIPA was a utility called SMUD, Sacramento Municipal Utility District, which has elected trustees that shut down a nuclear plant near Sacramento, Rancho Seco. But the first Cuomo, who was governor, Mario Cuomo, postponed elections to the board of LIPA. Pataki formalized that. And this third-party deal, which currently involves a heavily nuclear New Jersey utility, Public Service Electric Gas, they now, for the last several years, have been the operator of the electric grid on Long Island for LIPA. What the legislative commission said is, no, LIPA, like SMUD, should run the grid itself. But it doesn't seem to be happening. And a big issue is, where is Governor Hochul on this? What I'm told from legislative sources is that Governor Hochul has been out to lunch while PSEG spending millions lobbying state officials. I mean, she's been, in my view, a rather good governor in many respects. But now on the energy front, She's going backwards in terms of nuclear and in terms of not allowing, because he's been a big booster of wind power, but not allowing the full array of safe, green energy technologies that, again, are here today and can be utilized to be utilized.
I've been talking with Carl Grossman. He actually has a broadcast out on Free Speech TV, The New Nuclear Push, with Kevin Camps of Beyond Nuclear. It's been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Thank you.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The ratio of civilians to combatants killed is the lowest in the history of urban warfare, and certainly dense urban warfare like this.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu defends that nation's military, even as the UN and Gaza Health Ministry report 70% of those killed there are women and children. The International Criminal Court is seeking war crime and crime against humanity arrest warrants for Netanyahu, his defense minister, and several Hamas leaders. Secretary of State Antony Blinken condemned the court's move and said it makes ceasefire negotiations more complicated.
The extremely wrong-headed decision by the ICC prosecutor yesterday, the shameful equivalence implied between Hamas and the leadership of Israel, I think that only complicates the prospects for getting such an agreement.
It looks unlikely Congress will act, though Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito's home flew an upside-down flag before Joe Biden's inauguration. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is defending the scandal-plagued court, citing protests around the justices' homes.
It seems to me there are just nonstop attacks on the Supreme Court. We need to leave the Supreme Court alone, protect them from people who went into their neighborhoods and tried to do them harm.
Newly released court records show former President Donald Trump's attorneys found additional classified documents stashed in Mar-a-Lago 4 months after it was searched by the FBI. Meanwhile, Trump's campaign has deleted a video it had shared on social media, which included the terms Unified Reich, a Nazi phrase for total control of the government. Vice President Kamala Harris says the extremist rhetoric is corrosive for America.
This kind of rhetoric is unsurprising coming from the former president, and it is appalling. And we got to tell him who we are.
The nonpartisan nonprofit States United Action found that at least one election denier has gotten on the November ballot in every state that's held a congressional primary so far. The group's survey says that in 13 states, 70 election deniers, three-quarters of them incumbents, have made it to the general election. Outspoken election denier Carrie Lake is running for Senate in Arizona and backs the conspiracy theory of mass non-citizen voting.
We've got many lawsuits running, one of them in Arizona, fighting to make sure illegals aren't voting. We have the SAVE Act that I know Mike Johnson and President Trump have been pushing.
Finally, despite black voters' overwhelming support for Democrats, Rashawn Ray with the Brookings Institution says the numbers show they're not a monolith. He says many stay home in disgust, and about 10% consistently vote for Republicans, often seen as the lesser of two evils.
Because we have an overly simplistic two-party system, there are some people who would rather stay at home than vote for someone who they don't think aligns with their particular politics and their cultural values.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Yesterday, we reported on attempts by anti-voter legislators in Arizona to make it harder to get citizen ballot initiatives on the ballot and a higher threshold to pass one. Another suppression tactic by opponents? Slap signature canvassers with a subpoena. Recruiting and training a legion of canvassers to put a measure on the ballot is already an expensive proposition. As we noted yesterday, should the Arizona Distribution Requirement for Initiatives Amendment pass in November, signatures would be required from all 30 legislative districts in Arizona, meaning more volunteers and more expense. Bolts Magazine reports on another tactic: take the ballot question organizers to court. Opponents hope that by challenging the question's text, signature collection methods, and eligibility of canvassers, it can either invalidate signatures or make it financially unfeasible to continue.